Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're cutting right into the heart of modern leadership, where, you know, the demands for immediate results just collide so violently with this unprecedented complexity and chaos.
It's a huge challenge.
And in this environment, the most critical tool for any leader isn't some strategy document or a new piece of tech. It's the ability to manage one singular high-stakes variable themselves.
That's absolutely right. Leaders today are operating under just constant pressure. And we're not just talking about heavy workloads.
No.
We're talking about sustained psychological and physiological stress that demands an immediate but also a thoughtful response. Mm-hmm. If you react impulsively when the pressure hits, you compromise every single decision you make.
So our mission really for this deep dive is to try and map the internal architecture of effective self-regulation. We've got a fascinating stack of material that seems to connect the dots between, well, three really interconnected mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
First, how your body physically responds to stress. That's physiological composure. Second, how your mind tolerates the unknown, what we're calling negative capability. And third, the engine of insight, emotional intelligence.
And what unifies them all is a single powerful concept, Viktor Frankl's idea of the gap between a stimulus and a response.
Mm-hmm.
We're aiming to find those actionable insights that turn reactive, often destructive, knee-jerk leadership into thoughtful, sustainable leadership.
Right.
That ability to deliberately create and utilize that pause is the real superpower we're after.
Okay, let's jump right in. We have to start with the foundational layer, which is entirely physical. We're talking about the body's alarm system, the autonomic nervous system, or ANS.
Right.
Most people know this in basic terms, but what's the specific consequence for leaders when the ANS really flares up?
So the ANS, I mean, it's basically the silent regulator of your entire physical stress response. It's completely mm-hmm. involuntary, and it has these two really powerful branches. The sympathetic nervous system is the accelerator, the fight or flight system. When a major crisis hits, your heart rate surges, adrenaline spikes, your perception narrows.
And your breathing quickens.
Exactly.
In the animal kingdom, that burst of energy is helpful, right? But when you're sitting at a boardroom table or reading an alarming email, that physiological hijacking seems entirely counterproductive.
It is.
What specific cognitive failures are linked to being dominated by that sympathetic system?
The failure isn't just.
Sure.
It's not just getting angry or snapping. It's a profound loss of cognitive bandwidth. The moment you're dominated by sympathetic arousal, your brain redirects resources away from the prefrontal cortex.
The planning part of the brain.
The part responsible for planning, nuanced, complex, ethical judgment. And it shunts all that energy towards the immediate, impulsive limbic system. You lose peripheral vision, both literally and metaphorically.
I see. So leaders start looking for black and white solutions.
They start seeking binary solutions when the problem demands subtlety. They make hasty, ill-conceived decisions simply because their body is demanding immediate action, regardless of whether that action is wise.
So the inability to regulate your body is directly proportional to the inability to manage complexity and nuance. The goal, then, is to hit the brakes.
You've got to hit the brakes and activate the second branch, the parasympathetic nervous system.
The rest and digest state.
Exactly. Leadership presence, that quality of being grounded, centered, composed. It's fundamentally rooted in physiological self-regulation. To cultivate it, leaders must first become sort of internal sensors.
So learn to recognize the signals.
Yes, you have to learn to recognize those micro signals of sympathetic arousal before the full takeover. The sudden tension in your jaw, the quick shallow breath, the slight racing of the pulse.
I think that's a really important shift in perspective. It's not just about managing the consequences of stress, but noticing the cues.
Precisely.
So when you feel that racing pulse, that's not just a sign that you're stressed. It's a direct cue to pause.
It's a notification, a biological notification. And when you receive that notification, the immediate application of deliberate calming techniques, a slow, deep breath that emphasizes the exhale, or even just standing up and stretching briefly.
That actively engages the vagus nerve, right?
It does, and that signals the parasympathetic system to take over. This is the physiological foundation. When a leader can regulate their internal state, they stop being a source of panic and start projecting calm confidence, which immediately stabilizes the entire team.
That makes perfect sense. The body regulates the brain.
Yeah.
But even if we achieve that physical calm, the mind still has to deal with the inherent pressure of not having the answers.
Right. The anxiety is still there.
And here's where we move into the mental muscle, using this truly fascinating concept of negative capability.
This is such a powerful idea. And like you said, the poet John Keats, he coined it to describe the genius of Shakespeare, the capacity to be in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason.
In a high-stakes leadership environment, that impulse to rush to fact and reason is just, it's overwhelming. It's so uncomfortable to sit in a space where you genuinely don't know what the next quarter holds.
Or how the competition will react. Negative capability is essentially the patience to endure that discomfort.
It's a kind of psychological restraint.
It is. It's the psychological restraint required to hold the tension of a difficult situation. In organizational terms, researchers talk about this as the capacity to contain frustrations and anxieties.
So the leader is like a pressure vessel.
Think of it exactly like that. Employees are naturally anxious amid uncertainty about a restructuring, market shifts, and they bring that raw emotional material into the organization.
And the leader's job then is to absorb that raw material, that fear, that frustration, and then process it somehow.
Yes. The psychoanalyst Wilfred Bion described this process as the leader acting as a container. You absorb the team's emotional turbulence, you metabolize it internally, and then you return it to the team in a modified, useful form.
So you translate that raw, screaming anxiety into what? Articulated, manageable concerns.
Precisely. This prevents that fear from just ricocheting uncontrollably around the organization. But it requires immense psychological patience because the team is essentially making you feel their stress.
That's a massive burden. So what happens when the leader's capacity to contain that emotional pressure breaks? When the cup is full?
When containment fails, the leader reflexively discharges that stress. They just spread their own frustration and fear back into the team, often unconsciously.
Okay.
And our research shows this spreading typically manifests in three destructive, defensive forms, which leaders should be really vigilant about recognizing in themselves.
Lay them out for us.
Okay, first, we see over-intellectualizing. The leader, desperate to restore order and deny the frightening ambiguity, just barrages the team with endless data, reports, rationalizations.
The analysis paralysis defense.
That's it. They try to think their way out of a feeling, overwhelming everyone with complexity to avoid admitting they feel uncertain.
Okay, what's number two?
The second is overreacting emotionally. This is the classic overheated response. Lashing out, venting anger, displaying outright panic, or becoming suddenly pessimistic and doom-laden. They just can't hold their emotional ground.
And the third defense, I think you mentioned this one, can often look productive on the surface, which makes it insidious.
That's overacting, or the flight into action. This leader launches frantic, sudden initiatives, calls emergency meetings that achieve nothing, or micromanages relentlessly.
So they're just masking their internal fear and anxiety with sheer activity.
Exactly. They prefer the exhausting comfort of movement over the stillness required for thoughtful assessment.
So negative capability, then, is the conscious decision to sit still longer than your impulse tells you to just hold the tension of the unknown.
Right. And that restraint creates a psychological free space where a wiser course of action can emerge, which perfectly complements the physical stability from ANS regulation.
It's the mental muscle that keeps the space open.
It is. But to use that space productively, you need the right tool for interpretation. You need insight into what those feelings contained or spreading actually mean.
And that brings us to our third pillar, emotional intelligence, or EI. Now, for our audience, the basic definition of EI is probably well known.
Sure. Self and social awareness, managing relationships.
Right. We need to move past the generic description and understand its function in this specific context of the pause.
That's a fair challenge. EI is often watered down to just being nice or having feelings.
Yeah.
But in high-pressure leadership, EI is the crucial translation engine.
A translation engine, I like that.
It's the capacity that helps you label the psychic material you're containing. Without EI, negative capability is just uncomfortable silence.
So let's focus on the two aspects of EI most critical for managing this Franklin gap, self-awareness and then empathy and social skills.
Okay. Self-awareness is the internal monitor. When your ANS is telling you I'm in fight or flight mode and your negative capability is trying to hold the uncertainty, self-awareness is what steps in to clarify.
It gives it a name.
It gives it a name. I am not just stressed. I am frustrated by the unexpected loss of control, and my anger is masking my fear about the budget. It provides the specific diagnosis.
And why is that diagnosis so essential for the containment process?
Because you cannot give back modified, useful material if you don't understand the raw material in the first place. If a team member expresses deep anxiety about job security during a merger, empathy and social skills allow the leader to recognize and validate the underlying fear.
Rather than defensively arguing about the logic of the merger.
Exactly. It transforms the interaction from a confrontation into a shared acknowledged reality.
So EI provides the insight. Negative capability provides the patience. And ANS regulation provides the physical calm. Okay, I think we can finally bring them all together through Viktor Frankl's famous insight.
Frankl, having survived just horrific circumstances, he understood the ultimate power of choice. And his quote is so profound. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom.
I think this is where it all clicks. The sudden bad news, that's the stimulus. The gut reaction, panic, blame, anger, that's the automatic response.
Mm.
The leadership challenge is maximizing that brief, precious window of conscious choice in the middle.
Exactly. Our three pillars are tools designed specifically to manage, sustain, and fill that space. ANS techniques, that deliberate slow breath, relaxing the shoulders, they literally widen the space.
They keep the physical flood of adrenaline from collapsing your cognitive freedom.
They do. And negative capability encourages the leader to stay in the space. Instead of immediately collapsing the gap by reaching for the first quick fix or demanding an immediate answer, you tolerate the tension.
You resist the impulse to flee the discomfort.
You do. And finally, emotional intelligence fills the space. Instead of reacting defensively, you use your insight to ask, what is the best choice here that aligns with our values and long-term goals?
It moves the choice from a reflex to an intentional act of leadership.
And that sustained pause builds the leader's reputation for steadiness, integrity, and thoughtfulness under pressure.
Let's make this concrete with a couple of integrated scenarios. We'll take a major crisis stimulus and walk through the leader's internal and external moves.
Perfect. Scenario one. You're leading the Q3 review, and a major client contract, one you were counting on, has suddenly fallen through. The stimulus hits.
Immediately, the leader feels that sympathetic arousal. Heart pounding, maybe a wave of heat, tunnel vision starting.
The alarm bells are ringing.
They know this is the moment to apply Frankl's pause. They discreetly take a slow, deep breath, emphasizing the exhale to activate the parasympathetic brake. So physiological composure is achieved.
Okay, internal calm secured. Now they must resist the psychological urge to panic. They engage negative capability. They resist blaming the sales team or launching some immediate, desperate new initiative.
They internally acknowledge, this is chaos. It's uncertain. I have to sit with this uncertainty.
Right. And now they turn to the team using EI. They notice the collective slump of shoulders, the fear in their eyes. They start with empathy and self-awareness.
Okay. I know this news is a shock. And honestly, I feel the punch of it too. We're disappointed and that's valid.
By saying, I feel it too, the leader effectively contains the team's initial wave of emotional frustration. They're acknowledging the raw material, but not letting it derail the meeting.
And then they guide the response. Let's take 10 minutes to feel this, then we'll map out three solid alternatives by the end of the day.
See? The energy is redirected from a blame cascade or frantic activity into constructive brainstorming, all because the leader created and utilized that micro gap between the bad news and their ultimate response.
Let's try another common high-tension scenario. Organizational change causing high tension, and a manager is getting pushed back in a meeting.
Okay.
The manager walks in having already regulated their ANS, deliberately adopting a calm, steady tone to project composure. The stimulus arrives. An angry, accusatory comment from a veteran employee. This new system is just going to make our jobs impossible, and clearly no one considered the actual workflow.
The manager feels that instant flush of defensive anger, right? The urge to justify or counterattack. That's the impulse.
Of course.
Instead, they engage the micro gap, perhaps counting silently to two. They engage negative capability by refusing to take the aggressive tone as a personal attack. They just hold the tension of the critique.
Then they apply EI. They hear the frustration, but they also recognize the deeper anxiety about competence and workload.
So their response uses empathy and social skill. I hear the frustration and anger in your voice, and I appreciate the clarity of your concern. It sounds like you believe this new process will fundamentally slow down our most critical tasks.
And then asks a question, can you walk us through specifically which part creates the biggest obstacle?
That is the perfect response. The manager validated the employee's emotion, the raw material, without endorsing the aggressive packaging. They contained the anxiety and redirected the energy from confrontation toward problem solving.
Transformed a potentially derailing moment into actionable dialogue, all by choosing a non-reactive response within that Franklin gap.
This shows that these tools are not, you know, academic theory. They are moment-to-moment decisions. They are not innate qualities one is born with. They are trainable habits of mind and body that profoundly determine your long-term success.
Absolutely. And the mastery of this process leads to what you often refer to as inner sustainability, right?
Yes, inner sustainability. By consistently monitoring those autonomic signals, practicing psychological patience amid ambiguity, and exercising emotional insight, the leader manages their own psychic energy and stress levels.
And when a leader masters this self-management, they stop leaking stress into the organization. They become, effectively, an emotional shock absorber for the group.
Exactly. Shielding the team from unnecessary panic or drama by absorbing the turbulence and responding with clarifying intention. Leaders who consistently utilize the gap are the ones who are ready when the truly high-stakes challenges arise.
They're operating in alignment with their considered judgments and values,
rather than being held hostage by reflexive, panic-driven reactions.
So here is the final thought for you to carry into your week, building on Frankl's maxim. The growth and freedom available in your life and leadership are always located in that moment of choice between stimulus and response. Your mission this week is simple. Notice one opportunity, a frustrating email, a sudden setback, a harsh critique, where you can actively practice widening that space.
Take that deep breath. Resist the immediate impulse to solve, rationalize, or vent.
And consciously choose a response based on clarity, not adrenaline.
Until next time, stay calm, stay curious, and keep expanding that space.